We all deserve some yay in our day. So say hello to Hello. Hello makes oral and personal care products that add wonder to your routine, like a toothpaste that makes brushing fun for kids. It's called Unicorn Sparkle Toothpaste. It tastes like rainbows and sunshine, works brilliantly, and it's fun. So it's pretty much magic. And for the adults, Hello Anti-Plaque and Whitening Toothpaste, which is just as good without the unicorns. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.
Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
Throughout the unfolding saga of the Brian Koberger trial, we've all seen countless strategic moves, some tactical, others desperate, and many somewhere in between. But as we approach the courtroom showdown, one critical aspect remains a mystery. How will Brian Koberger himself come across to the jury? To date, he's maintained a stoic, cold presence during preliminary hearings, a demeanor his defense team attributes to autism, or to put it bluntly, resting emotionless face, or resting bitch face, depending how you look at it or call it. But whatever the reason, juries are human, and humans respond strongly to emotional cues or lack thereof. It raises the question, could Koberger's own personality inadvertently become his worst enemy in court? Recently, we've witnessed the judge firmly dismissing various defense motions from denying the trial to delaying the trial to introducing alternate suspects, signaling a clear intent to move forward swiftly. Now, with few cards left to play, the defense might need to address Koberger's unsettling courtroom presence head on, either by explaining his mannerisms or even trying to coach him on displaying more relatable behaviors. But isn't that, is it a bit much? Is it even realistic? Can you truly coach someone to appear more human, empathetic, or at least relatable? Especially in the pressure cooker environment of a murder trial? Or as our guest today argues, is attempting to mask your true self a dangerous and untimely, ineffective game? To explore this complex question, I'm joined again by Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent and former chief of the FBI's Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Robin has extensive experience not only in reading people's subtle behaviors and intentions, but also in understanding the immense challenges of maintaining false personas. Now, okay, they can't argue third party. They can't, there's no delay going on here anymore. I mean, the evidence that we've seen is pretty damning. Koberger, from what we know and what we've seen, doesn't really play that well, I think, in a courtroom to a jury. At least we haven't seen him in front of a jury yet, but he's just very kind of stoic, silent. I know that they're trying to make excuses for it, of the autism and all that, but you think they should maybe do a little intervention there, a little like, look, we know you don't naturally show emotion like human beings do, but can we give you a human lesson for a little while and just try and even act it, fake it till you make it in front of the jury so you don't look like the cold, calculating monster that you very well might be? Do you think that there should, you think they will, and do you think they should try and work with Koberger a little bit to be a little bit more likable in court? Because right now you just kind of got a cold body sitting there.
You can't.
No.
We are who we are. Our baseline is our baseline. And even though we might be able to control our baseline for limited periods of time, over a period of time, that exhausts us. I did a lot of undercover work.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you the emotional energy drain of trying to be someone you're not over a period of time is exhausting and unsustainable. I'm just looking at this in politics. We see this in politics all the time. You see someone politicking on the stump or in commercials. And yet when they get in office, they turn into, after a period of time, they're nothing like they we saw here, because the act is gone. It's an act. If you're acting, it's extremely energy draining. And also at this point, people have seen him enough to know that it would be an act, and it would come across as extremely incongruent, extremely disingenuous. I think, so I do a lot of coaching with people that say, you know, Robin, what do I do if I have what's called natural resting angry face? And if you can't do anything about it, you simply say, well, then you what's called negate the frame. And that's what she's trying to do with the autism. What that means is that if you have a certain look or way about you that you know is off-putting, the first thing you can do to engender trust is say, listen, I know that I have this natural listening, you know, resting angry face. Just know when I'm doing this, this is actually my code for letting you know non-verbally, I'm really paying attention to you. I'm sorry that I look this way, but it's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a little smile, you get a little reaction. And then now we know that anytime we see Robin doing this, you know, he's not angry. He's just paying attention. So it's the best thing you can do is negate that frame. So here's a frame in who what you're going to see. I'm going to negate what you're seeing by giving an explanation before you see it.
Yeah, I hear you. That makes a lot of sense. My girlfriend calls it RBF, resting bitch face. Because
I didn't want to use that word, but yes, that's what I called it.
Because actually, and then on our first date, she said that to me. She's like, I just want you to know. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, I still really haven't seen it. I'm like, you look pretty nice every time but I get it. Like some people, you know, some people will perceive that, and that's a good, important thing to do. The autism thing though, I mean, if they can't introduce that into the trial at all, how are they going to say it? Just like, look, he has that. He has RBF.
I don't know how she would do it or whether it plays well. What I would do, I am not a lawyer. I would say, listen, welcome to during opening statements is, here's who I am. Here's who my client is. My client has spent his career in education as a professional educator, is getting his PhD. And as such, he's got a certain way that he looks and how he interacts with the world. He's very stoic. He's very this. In other words, I would explain what the look is and what it actually means without giving a technical or clinical diagnosis. Says, listen, he's got resting bitch face because he's not actually bitchy. He's not actually a serial killer.
Yeah.
He's just really focused on what we're all saying.
Ignore the fact that he's acting and looking like a serial killer and he's on trial for being one. But just because he looks and acts like one doesn't mean he is.
So on a sidebar on this, you know, what really struck me, because last week we talked about Rex Heuermann.
Yeah.
And we watched the Peacock special with Asa and the daughter, Victoria, and Rex himself. We heard Rex speak in that.
Yeah.
And part of that was we saw some film footage of BTK. All I was thinking is the entire time was, well, BTK and Rex Heuermann, as off-putting as Rex looks, when you talk to him, when you hear him speak, he's actually not off-putting.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking is that, wow, you have both BTK and Rex Heuermann look a lot more nice and congenial than he does.
They actually do.
I know. And, like, BTK, kind of a charming looking guy. You know, it just.
And when he speaks pretty eloquently.
I know.
You know, and at least he did.
And that's why. Poor Koberger, man. He's got a lot going against him.
They were also much older than him too. Like, it makes you wonder, like, if Koberger had some more reps in life, like, would he have been that person after that, or did he just get caught far too young?
Well, you know, it's what makes a successful serial killer is their charm. You know, it's why they were doing, again, think about it, it's why they got away with what they were doing. But again, Rex, you know, innocent until proven guilty. But, you know, what makes people successful at their careers is the maturity level and your ability to compel people to do things that are not in their best interest comes down to personality.
I don't think Koberger possessed that trait. And I think that's another thing. It's why he got caught. I think it's why he, I don't think would have ever been a successful serial killer.
So here's a little thought experiment. Both BTK and Rex Heuermann interacted with their victims before they were victimized.
Yeah.
Correct?
Rex Heuermann and BTK.
Some level.
To some level, yes.
Prostitution. I mean, he actually, even
BTK
with prostitutes.
BTK stalked. There's so many in his case. I would imagine right. There was at least one that there was some sort of interaction, I believe.
Yeah, so. I was just only because, my thought experiment was both of them, because they had more congenial personalities, mm-hmm. that they had the ability to actually form some sort of connection in their stalking or with anyone that they're potentially assessing as victims.
Yeah.
Again, innocent until proven guilty. Koberger, mm-hmm. lack of social ability, lack of social skills, yeah. no interaction with the victims ahead of time. So maybe that.
I think that's a big difference. I mean, all allegedly, obviously, innocent until proven guilty. Yes, but yeah, I mean, being BTK. I mean, although he wasn't super, he was pretty normal in his community. He didn't like.
Yeah.
I mean, if he showed up at your doorstep, in a uniform, you'd probably let him in. He says, oh yeah, that's the guy that gets the dogs. He wasn't super, he didn't appear very threatening.
Right.
He just didn't. Rex,
and even with Rex Huerman has an off-putting look.
But when you hear him talk, and there was that interview he did about the architecture stuff.
Yeah.
He seemed like a pretty affable guy. Like he's wearing sunglasses, doing silly
stuff.
His best
friend thought so too.
Yeah. Koberger, that didn't exist. I think he was just awkward, awkward, awkward. And I think that was his biggest struggle in life and probably partially what maybe drove him to this.
I agree.
Is just that is no matter what he did, no matter how hard he tried, he couldn't act human. And other humans noticed that. Fascinating insights there from Robin Drake, and perhaps a sobering reminder that no matter how calculated courtroom strategies may be, they inevitably collide with human realities. Robin's point about the exhaustion and futility of maintaining an artificial persona under prolonged scrutiny is particularly striking. It suggests that any attempt to coach Koberger into appearing more empathetic or relatable would probably backfire spectacularly. Potentially, it could make some jurors even more uneasy. But another intriguing takeaway is Robin's advice to openly acknowledge and explain Koberger's demeanor rather than trying to mask it. Could Ann Taylor effectively address this to a jury? Framing Koberger's lack of emotional display, not as sinister coldness, but as simply who he is? Quirky, socially awkward, academic, misunderstood rather than malicious? Or is he exactly that? And that's why he looks that way, and that's why he acts that way. It's a risky gamble, but perhaps less risky than attempting a courtroom performance doomed to fail. Robin's comparison of Koberger with other infamous figures like BTK or Rex Huerman adds yet another dimension to the discussion. Those killers, one is convicted, one is still, allegedly Huerman, disturbingly able to bend their communities precisely and blend into them because of their superficial charm or ability to connect socially, qualities Koberger noticeably lacks. Could this key difference in personality and social skills partially explain why Koberger, unlike others, was quickly identified and arrested? As the trial moves forward, the interplay between evidence, narrative, and the defendant's own behavior will become increasingly more critical. Jurors will inevitably form opinions not just on evidence presented, but on the subtle human interactions and behaviors unfolding before their eyes in court. Ultimately, Koberger's awkward, unsettling presence might underscore a deeper truth. In the high-stakes environment of criminal trials, genuine human behavior, whether charming, troubling, or deeply uncomfortable, often becomes just as influential as forensic details and legal arguments. Thanks again to Robin Drake for helping us unpack these complex psychological dimensions. Tell me what you guys think of what we just talked about in the comments section on YouTube. And if you're listening to us on the podcast platform, please do check us out on YouTube. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Hit subscribe there as well. Hopefully you've already hit it on the podcast platforms. Check us out on YouTube, hit subscribe, and then let us know what you think. You can even get on commenting on this stuff before everybody else. Get yours to the top. Keep it there when you become a premium subscriber. on YouTube. We just started that. And with that, you guys get access to all of our videos, all of our reporting, everything before we release it out to the public. Now, there's a lot of things that we release literally as they happen. And that goes out, you know, that's they can't advance that one. We can't look into the future. But we do a lot of reporting that we put out with a little bit of time because it doesn't need to go out at that moment. Interviews, discussions, things of that nature. You get access to all of that. Some of our look back type pieces as well, where we look at cases from the past and dive deep into what made them happen. You get all of that in advance and as part of your membership. Just check it out over on YouTube. We do greatly appreciate that. There's an Apple version of it as well on Apple Podcasts if you want to just do the audio side of things. Either way, we greatly appreciate that support. So please do press subscribe. And like I said, most importantly, tell me what you think in the comments section. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.